This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. You heard Big Voice Man, John Lopez, Reginald Tula, Figgy Fig hanging out with you. Excited for what a great time in Houston sports. I mean, we say it a lot, but it definitely feels like it. And the reason I come back today is I see myself and Figgy both wearing our liftoff playoff shirts for game two.
Mine says Columbia.
Yeah, not in the same vein, unfortunately.
You ain't down for the squad,
who
man.
Who said? You bite your tongue.
Don't bite your tongue. That usually doesn't feel good. But, yeah, Rockets game two tonight. Astros have an opportunity.
Columbia is what I need.
You do?
I do. I need
They have Rockets fishing shirts, don't they?
They got Astros. They got to have Rockets.
I've got Astros.
I've never seen the Rockets one.
Stop by Academy. I feel like they got those. Or at least I know they have fishing stuff too.
And now they got Jordan Brand there.
I saw you picking up some stuff.
Yeah. I got the bucket hat, man.
You got the CJ Gardner hat?
I don't know if they sell those.
I don't think so, man.
I don't know if they sell those. Maybe Cam Newton. Does Cam Newton have a line? Yeah, that's what I thought of. I thought of two things when I saw CJ Gardner Johnson talking to the Assemble Media. In that hat that made him look like a 19 or like an early or late 1800s like magician
on a carny,
no, not even a carny, on a steamboat on the Mississippi. That's what he looked like with that hat on. But that was him talking to the Assemble Media yesterday. I thought about Cam Newton. I thought about the frog and the prince is the Disney princess. I guess
was it Princess and the Frog? Yeah.
It was Princess and the Frog. There we go. Princess and the Frog.
You know what
Thank
I
you.
Thought
I appreciate
about?
You.
What?
I love C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Haven't even seen him play it down here.
Yeah.
I just love that cat. And then the other thing I thought about, and this is what I wanted to ask you guys and our listeners, 713-572-4610. I don't think the Texans in their entire history from day one have ever had a player like this. Ever.
You said that during the break, and I was sitting there trying to guess. I'm like, hey, I don't think they did.
I don't think they've ever had a play. The combination of – and let me lay it out for you, Figgy. Sorry.
Yeah, what's the criteria?
The combination of playing at this level with that kind of – it's even beyond swag.
Edge. Personality.
Riz.
I'm very uncomfortable.
You'll hear that. No. You'll hear that during confessions.
Yeah, please take that one back. If you could just reel that one back in for me, I'd appreciate it for you.
I have a confession about that term in about 18 minutes or so. The combination of that confidence, just candor, you know, all of it. I started going back and Figgy, and this is what you're talking about. I started going back and thinking, what player has been the closest to C.J. Gardner-Johnson? There's two factors here.
Well, can I allow C.J. Gardner-Johnson to tell you about himself so that we can see if
Please.
We can compare? This was asked of C.J. Gardner-Johnson, and I have to find what I'm going to call him because apparently he liked being called C.D. or 8. He said those are what he's called, and neither of those really roll off the tongue very nicely for me to also have people understand what I'm trying to say. So for the time being, I'm going to try and give you the whole C.J. Gardner-Johnson. We'll see if I find a better situation. But C.J. Gardner-Johnson, what is your style of play and your mentality within football games?
Get the ball, hit hard, and I guess they talk crap. But, I mean, I'm one of the most winning safeties in football right now. So I think what I bring here is just culture that we should all technically have in us already. I always played winning football before. This team full of guys that's been in great colleges, from Bama to LSU, Florida State. So we just got to continue to do what we've been doing since we were kids. At the end of the day, it's not hard. Go out there and trust each other and trust what Coach D'Amico is telling us and go win some football.
And outspoken. That's the other word I was looking for.
There it is.
Like all of that. The Texans have never had get the ball, hit hard, talk crap. Love this cat.
All in one dude.
Love this cat. And here's the interesting thing, and I think it's worth talking about. I really do. First of all, I went back and started thinking. Anybody close to C.J. Gardner, text in, YouTube, Twitch, whatever. Antonio Smith?
That one comes in from the 832.
Antonio Smith is one I thought about.
They thought Antonio Smith. They said Sean Cody as well. This is one that I did not think about when we were having the conversation, but I'm like, okay, I can kind of see it. He just felt a little bit more quiet. Mm-hmm. Is Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu.
No, he was quiet. No.
He wasn't like this.
But he did have the edge.
He did have the edge.
You could,
the game.
It definitely permeated out of him, but he was not nearly as outspoken as bold.
What's funny is I remember when the Texans signed him, and that was kind of like, ooh, the Honey Badger. Like, they very daring right now signing the Honey Badger. That was a big deal.
That's the second point. I think this signals something of a shift, too, from the very, very top. The tippity top, as people have put it in the past here.
What's up, Whitney Merciless?
The tippity top. Bob McNair wouldn't have done this.
No.
Bob McNair, I'm sorry. He would not have done it.
This organization is very right kind of guy oriented, even still.
Yeah.
Which is funny because, and I think I heard the Drive talking about this. Shout out to Clint and Show. It does not feel like what I would normally talk about is like the limitations of your talent pool. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons why, you know, like in the NFL, when it comes to coaching hiring, this is why I'm so adamant about, make sure you get diversity in. And this is why I'm still largely a proponent of the Rooney Rule, even though, you know, it can be a little bit, it feels farcical at times, is the wider that you open your talent pool, the more likely you are to get the talent that you need in order to compete, especially in competitive spaces where the NFL absolutely has been built to be. Except, inherently, when you do this thing where you're like, we only really want dudes that do these certain things, you are narrowing down your pool. Except I'm
cut
good with
this certain way.
Right. Yeah. You're narrowing down your pool. And so, in theory, that would go counter to what my general thesis is about this. But it doesn't seem to have harmed their ability to find players, especially a number of players that fit and that help them play at a high level as well. And so, like, it's worked for them. However, that's kind of a slightly different aspect of where they have been previously, where it's like they don't necessarily want guys that are like, you know, I guess I don't even know how I characterize it. Guys that are super outspoken necessarily, or
but
guys
all of
that,
the above, the things
yeah,
that
all
I
those,
mentioned.
Yeah, you're right.
All those things. And so this is a kind of a salute, a hat tip, whatever you want to say to Cal and Hannah. It really is. I mean, this is not something like, you know, his dad, her father-in-law would have done, I don't feel. Maybe, but I don't feel. It just sort of signals a transition. How many years have we been here? Especially the longtime listeners followed this organization from the outset. How many conversations have we had over the years where like, yeah, the Texans really need a guy with that edge. Now, they brought in guys with that edge.
And they've got guys with edge. Yeah. Like, again, they found a way to get the edge within the parameters of Swarm. But, yeah, this is just kind of different.
Yeah.
But it still seems like it fits. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that I find interesting, right? He's talking about, you know, he one of the things I caught, and maybe this is just the natural kind of inclination of people in that football space. He immediately jumped into Coach D'Amico and all those in the same way that it feels like it fits very much with all the respect that they typically go with.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, there's still that swagger in some ways.
Well, let's
right?
give him a little more taste of that swagger.
Please. This is C.J. Gardner-Johnson being asked about specifically D'Amico. What have you learned from D'Amico?
Championship or nothing. He ain't bring me here to win no division or no conference. So if I'm here to help win the Super Bowl, that's gonna be the, you know, the reason. But I think people know. A lot of people look at this team is like, oh, you know, they got a lot of great pieces, but me to you, I think it's more than just a lot of great pieces. You have a great culture here, great organization. I think the more you fill this up with winners, not just me, because D'Amico was a winner, Dart Runner Darby was a winner, Will was a winner. So you just fill the room up with winners. I think you're going to get what you want, and I think we're going to get it real soon.
Have I mentioned I love this dude? And by the way, you know what part of that, Figgy, you know what part of that I love the most?
What?
When he quieted down the crowd?
I didn't come here to win any division.
Oh, okay.
Like, I've said it for years.
Championship and nothing.
When you start bragging about division titles are for losers. And obviously, I know by default that means you're actually technically a winner. But when you're like, hey, we've won the division three times, that's a franchise that hasn't won anything.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And, of course, having this in a defensive back makes sense. That's the, mm-hmm. one of those positions that you have to have, like, inherently you have to have kind of that bravado, because it is we talk about a sports of failure when you talk about baseball. Cornerback is a position of failure, man. You're, mm-hmm. running backwards. These guys running full speed at you. People are going to get catches, and now you got to line it up and do it again in the space where it's probably most of the rules are, you know, geared against you and what you're trying to do. In that same way, many people mentioning Dante Robinson.
I had Dante on my list.
Dante Robinson, yeah. had that edge. People were talking about Lonnie Walker, DJ Swearinger.
Well, he wasn't very good. I thought of DJ Swag, is what he called himself back then. He was okay, but he the combination of this and he, none of these guys that we're talking about. Somebody's mentioned Lonnie Johnson, Brian Cushing. See, the thing about Brian Cushing is, in the locker room behind the scenes, he was fiery. He was this, but publicly, it was like talking to a cow. I mean, he just sort of stood there, answered the questions very deliberately, didn't really say anything. Texans, I'm telling you, Texans have never had anyone like this.
Yeah, and I think that it's a good mixture, though, because I think when you first acquired him in that trade where you send Kenyon Green to Philadelphia, you get him back, I was like, thinking about, I mean, clearly the player itself, right? When you talk about what he's capable of doing, the way he takes away the football, those things is incredible. I saw someone on the text line already talking about that they love him because of the way that he's taken Kamari Lassiter under his wing, mm-hmm. already. And he's talked about that as well. But on top of that, I feel like this culture, he acknowledged that in that quote there. He's already kind of understanding, and I think the culture does a good job of, you know, softening the edges of that edge, right? If that, mm-hmm. makes sense.
Yeah.
To where it's palatable within the context, but then it still feels like it has force.
Yeah.
Within what you're doing. I'm super excited to see what this secondary is. And I'm interested to see if he at all shifts the culture of that defense forward somewhat. Because that culture, the defense is in an incredible place. But, I mean, I know Aziz kind of has that edge. We saw it. Like, but I wonder if this also shifts that defense in a different way as well, culturally.
Mm-hmm. I want you guys to hear another one of my favorites. When I listened to some of these like 3 and 4 times, but this was terrific.
Find yourself, like, you know, we're comfortable with this.
When
is
I won the Super Bowl. Won the Super Bowl.
Right.
Because people don't care.
Like when you were a young player.
Mm-mm. I ain't found myself until I won the Super Bowl. You gotta understand what I'm telling you. Like, my whole career, I know what the next guy's going through. Never won a Super Bowl. So all these guys in this building, they have the same hunger and anger about, I got to the top of the mountain, top of the mountain. I've been there 3 times. So I found myself when I understood that it's not about me. When you win a championship, it's really not about you. Like, you have accolades, you do a lot of things, but I think one thing I took from Philly is you can't be great without the greatest of others. And I think that's how we're gonna win here. You appreciate everybody for what they really can do, from the kitchen to the equipment, even to the laundry people. Like, if you put the loop the right way, that make you feel good. So I think just accepting who you are. I think that's when I found myself, accepting who I was and understanding what I could really be and affect in a positive way. Became a world champion, and that was history.
Yeah, the bravado, but what I love, the bravado always comes on the back end with it is like some real introspection, reflection. Like, it's not empty, right? It's not empty bravado. And obviously we know because he's a good player, but then also just the way that he thinks about it, seems the way that he thinks about the game, the way he thinks about the youth. I mean, he talked about, like, as a young player, he didn't find himself, but he found himself when he won a championship. And I can't wait till you see that winner mentality even further on this team all the way around. Excited for
him. Just absolutely unabashedly, unashamedly, himself, as he said, but perspective. Maybe that's what you were talking about.
Yeah, that's
like
a word.
Like, he's got the appreciate right. That. Like, he can come across, like, you first heard that and you're like, oh, this guy's cocky. And then you hear the rest of it and you're like, that guy's got perspective.
Yes.
You know, he's
yes.
got the right perspective on how to do this.
Another perspective on the CJ Gardner-Johnson. Let's turn to the phone line. Who we got on the phone here, Fig?
We got Wood. Wood, what's up, man?
Yeah.
How y'all fellas doing? I want to say this real quick about my GM, Nick Caserio. Don't give up my first-round pick this year. I want to keep my first-round pick. We gave it away last year, and the man is gone already. He's gone to New England. I told y'all we should have never got rid of our first-round pick. You can always get a receiver. But I wanted to get that off my chest, Nick Caserio. All right, so now getting back to the young man here. He's a young man that he lost the Super Bowl with Philadelphia. Now he won the Super Bowl with Philadelphia. So he understands what it's like to be a champion. He also been traded from Philadelphia to Houston so he understands the business aspect of the NFL. So I was listening to the interview when he was on, when the morning show played it, and he was talking about he has a different perspective of meeting when he met TJ this morning, I mean this week, than from what he perceived to know of him. Once he talked to him, he see him in a different light now. And the NFL, a lot of players are going to see TJ different because they don't see TJ in the same eyes as we do, because we're more or less, we're growing up with TJ. He's homegrown here with us because he'd have been here with us 2 to 3 years now, and we know everything there is to know about TJ, his mannerism, his spirituality. Now, other players know he has spirituality, but they don't know how deep his passion is for his football. Now, they also know he's passionate enough where he's very sensitive in his ways where he loves his players, which was shown when he was crying with Tank Dell when his friend went down. Now, I was mad because if my friend go down, I'm going to be like, hey, man, we need to go out there and get mad. They just hurt our boy. We need to get together. I'm not going to be crying on the sideline. Talking to you now, CJ, you need to get tough. Toughen it up. Realize, you know, this is a football game that you need to pull everybody together. You are the captain of the team. If somebody go down, y'all need to come together, not be over there holding hands and talking about, you know what, we're going to be all right. Now,
man. All right, we got to go. We talked about the Kansas City game right now.
He brought that up the Monday after the game. He's still bringing it up.
Appreciate you, Wood.
Yeah, appreciate you, Wood. Nah, I mean, yeah, he's definitely got a lot of perspective. Yeah. I think, man, CJ, this is the thing, man. However, especially when it comes down to the sports, is one of the beautiful things. However people perceive you, you can change that by balling. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think that's why people are the most excited about. I understand not giving away that first-round pick. It'll be interesting to see what Nick Sirianni does, because there's a lot of talk about even trading up. Mm-hmm. Further into the first round, but you could trade back. I also wouldn't necessarily. Well, actually, I don't know how mad I'd be about them trading back. Although with all the kind of talk about the ideas of maybe there being a run on offensive linemen, and I know Donovan Jackson is a guy that they've added who maybe expands that kind of window of guys that they might be interested in early on in the draft. But yeah, maybe don't trade out, especially because it feels like offensive linemen, let all these insiders tell you, is a place where the Texans want to go. And it seems like there's a lot of teams that want to get in that space as well. All right, appreciate you. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Excited about C.J. Gardner-Johnson on this football team. Coming up next, let's get into our lunchtime confessions presented by the Men's Clinic.
All right, so this is a confession, but I also need a little feedback here from you guys. So I unashamedly said something to one of my kids yesterday that I refuse to apologize for because I think it's fine.
Okay.
All right? So we were talking about C.J. Gardner-Johnson, and I was texting, and I said in the text, Figgy, C.J. had that riz. To which I got a lot of eye roll emojis, and this text back. Please don't say that anymore.
Right.
I refuse to apologize for that, because I kind of said it ironically, you know, for effect. I often say, and you've heard me maybe say this a couple times on the show, I often say lit. Now, I don't say lit because it's part of my vernacular. I say lit kind of ironically to be, you know, for effect, like I said. I've also said shook, like, you know. So
what are we doing here?
I'm not going to
apologize. He's being somebody's daddy. Like this is where I will acknowledge dad's love.
Why can't I say Riz? Give me one good reason.
You don't have to say it.
But I can.
You're saying it because other younger kids are saying.
I'm saying it for the effect.
That's the only reason you're saying it.
You're saying it to annoy your children.
Yes.
That's what dads do. Yeah. They're trying to annoy their children by using the modern, cool, hip vernacular, what have you. Mm-hmm. And particularly if you can use it in a way that is outside of what the intended usage is. Because, you know, people's daddies love doing that thing where they use it incorrectly, too. And then you're annoying your children.
Yeah, salute to my pops, man. My pops don't give a damn about none of that.
But isn't it?
He stay in his lane.
Oh,
I
get it.
He ain't trying to do all of that extra stuff.
I generally stay in my lane, but just for the effect, sometimes it actually drives home the message even more, doesn't it?
What is the message that you're trying to drive home here again?
CJ had that Riz.
And what do Riz mean?
Like charisma.
So why didn't you say charisma?
I could have.
You could have just said you got that charisma.
I could have. But it hit.
No, so
no, it don't.
The point is you being annoying to them children.
It hit.
Which,
it,
again, it I maintain is section. Your right, and it's probably one of the few things that, like, parents have within them to gain the level of enjoyment when it comes to their children. So I'm not going to take that away from you, but I do want you to acknowledge you did it to annoy them. Like, you didn't do it for effect or whatever. The effect is I want to annoy these children right now.
Sometimes we just got to know our lanes. I'm getting at that age where some of these terms I won't even use, man.
So, oh, for sure.
Sometimes people be like, now people use the word twin as like, that's my twin.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I ain't calling no grown ass man no twin, man. Like, nah.
And they'll use it just kind of generically, almost as if to say bro or what have
bro
you.
Bro or friend or something like that.
Like, you good twin? I'm like, what is happening? Yeah. Why are we doing this?
Yeah, you heard a lot of that from, LiAngelo Ball and his raps and all that stuff. I'm just like, man, I'm not using
so it. So thumbs up or thumbs down, future of Riz in my vocabulary?
Two thumbs down.
I personally give you a thumbs down, but I guess that's kind of the point. Like, you are actively trying to annoy us in doing this. And if you will acknowledge that that's what you're trying to do, then I feel like then that's what you're, then it's accomplished. You've accomplished a goal.
People are out there trying to light their radios on fire right now. Somebody said.
That's right. That's right. Somebody said it doesn't sound right. Sorry. Someone said it doesn't sound right coming from John. And it is what it is, John. That is, it absolutely is what it is. All right. Maybe I should just bring this back because we were talking about CJ Gardner-Johnson in the break. And I still maintain, I know that he brought this up in talking about his new teammate, John Metchie, as well. And he just out of nowhere came up with the, hey, Metchie, you're going to have to give up that eight. And I think that he was joking. Like, I sincerely, my confession is, I still don't think that he's actually going to try and get that number, to be completely honest.
He wasn't asked about the number. He brought it up. He brought up the number on another question. So,
yeah, no, the question did not come up to it. So it did bring it up, but I did wonder if this was just kind of like tongue-in-cheek, this would be fun, or if this was like, I'm putting you on notice that we are going to have a conversation soon.
I think it was that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Somebody said, let Lopez cook. Don't encourage him.
Let Lopez
cook. Don't encourage him. He gets enough of that. Please don't. But yeah, I know that, and this is pocket watching, so I do apologize because that's typically not in my get down. However, CJ Gardner-Johnson has a career earnings of, you know, just over 20 million in his career. Not saying that there's not expendable or disposable income within that, but I don't know if he necessarily wants to do that. Plus, in his history, he has worn a number of numbers, 22, 23, 2, and then he settled on 8.
But he said 8. 8's my name is what he said.
Yeah, he said
8 is my name.
People call him 8, but they'll also call you 23, who have you, if you wear that.
Doesn't hit the same.
And maybe the best case for you is that he got some money after he was wearing 8, once he was wearing 8, so maybe that allows him to do this.
And a Super Bowl.
He did get a Super Bowl after that, but I'm like, I feel like he's still within that space. Figgy, do we have the audio of him?
I couldn't find it.
All right, my bad.
Yeah, don't sweat it.
I should have found it. I still am in a place where I don't know that he's actually going to hit up Metchie for that number.
Don't let those people silence you, John. Thank you.
No, do. Do,
I will
do
not
let
be,
us
I will
silence
not be
you.
Silenced.
Just continue to look like a fool.
I love that all the daddies came to Lopez's defense. 8-3-2. Lopez out there trying to be the hip hop current dad while wearing cargo shorts, white tube socks, and flip flops.
Oh, I don't go that far. I don't go that far.
Yep, that sounds about right. So I don't know. I got to confess, man. I don't know if ESPN is trying to be funny or is they dead ass serious. So on First Take, Snoop Dogg was on there. Yeah. I don't know what he was advertising, but he was there. And so you know how ESPN do with different headlines, and they try to be super creative with them. And this was the headline. I wonder if they just trying to be a little funny with it because Snoop was on there. So the segment was, how high are you on?
Oh, gosh.
And then one of the questions was Travis Hunter being the two-way player. So you think I wonder if they trying to be funny.
Yes,
with
of course.
That, how high are you on?
Yes.
Did they put the emphasis on high in there?
No, they did.
This is how. No, that's a common kind of conversation parlance, right? See, how high are you on this?
That's where I was going with because I was thinking that, but I'm like, they got Snoop Dogg on there, so I want because it's Disney. It's owned by Disney, so they don't want to be too 420 friendly.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, I wonder if that was kind of like a little inside joke. How high are you on with Snoop Dogg?
Absolutely. There's so many different ways you could have said that. like, you know, who's your top prospects? You know, who, what, yeah. whatever. But instead, they said, how high are you on?
Yeah, so I'm looking at this. They had a couple different questions, too, but how high are you on?
That does make me wonder, though. If you do have ESPN shows and producers actively doing that in the year of our Lord 2025, why was Pat McAfee upset that Paul Heyman was talking about him smoking the ganja? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, if that's what it is, then you're probably good there. Mm-hmm. Now, the one that you probably don't want is the airing out of y'all's interpersonal.
Yeah. Stephen A. Smith.
Stephen A. Smith. Right. But, that one, I was like, hey, what you all mad about? It seems like they're good with you smoking your weed as long as it's not super public.
Yeah. But, like you said, Reggie, it is a common phrase. How high are you on so-and-so in the draft, that type of thing. But it's funny they had that with Snoop Dogg sitting there.
From the 281, did Figgy just discover what a double entendre is? No, he knows what a double entendre is.
Dog, I'm a rapper, man.
Go ahead and flex your bona fides.
Hey, man, I do this for a living.
I do this.
I know what it is, but I wonder if ESPN know what they was doing.
Hey, 48-year-old dad just texted in from the 713. Hey, twin, my dude, you lit and Riz, my guy.
Yeah, that sounds like a 48-year-old dad.
Wow.
Actually, he might be a little older.
Admittedly, I didn't think through both these confessions because this one is not going to be very good to my first confession. It's going to very much make me look like the old guy. I realized something today when I was talking to Reggie earlier that I'm not sure is a good thing or a bad thing. I'm going to Suit Mart after the show to pick up a sport jacket.
You're not even going to spend that much, brother.
Okay. Yeah. Pick up a sport coat because I'm emceeing an event on Saturday. Shout out to Good Shepherd School in Kingwood. Hope you go there for the gala on Saturday night, 40-year anniversary. How about that?
Hey.
So I'm emceeing. So I'm going to get a new sport coat. I was looking in my closet today. I haven't bought a new sport coat in over 20 years.
So you got to use that old sports coat.
No, I'm going to get a new one.
No, use the one you got 20 years ago.
See, the part that he didn't let you know is that his wife was like, "Hey, you want to get a new sport coat?" Which is basically her saying, "You need to get a new sport coat."
Yes.
Use that one from 1988.
Yeah, I probably have one from 1988. The only dress clothes. This is why I say it might be a good thing. The good thing is I don't have to wear a lot of dress clothes in my life. You know, very very rarely. So that's the good part. The bad thing is I haven't bought a new sport coat in over 20 years, maybe 25. But I did buy a tuxedo when my kids started getting married. So that the most recent purchase. But, yeah, I haven't bought a sport coat.
So just wear a tuxedo.
Oh, I should wear the tuxedo.
No, go to Super Mario. I was playing. I wanted to see if you'd be the dude who was willing to be just incredibly overdressed for the circumstance.
Yeah.
And you were like, yes, which I did not anticipate considering your particular affinity for fishing shirts.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody said we stick with our era of lingo. Never say Riz again, please. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Although someone did say, hey, John, can you say for me? Yacht. They want to hear you say that. So they want to see what that sounds like coming out of your mouth. I'm not going to let them have that for me, though.
How about H time?
Even that. It was a little rough.
We had a whole situation with that last time. I think DeAndre Hawkins tweeted H time.
Yeah.
And everybody on the show, H-Tine?
H-Tine.
I'm like, that's not how we say it.
I love all these dads that are coming in like, I'm going to use Riz. I'm going to use Riz on my niece.
Oh, goodness. This is going the entirely different way. Everybody's like, now get John to say this. Get John to say that. Oh, no. I'm a little uncomfortable where that might land us. But for the time being, appreciation to the Men's Clinic who brings you our lunchtime confessions right here in the loop on Sports
Radio. John, spell addict.
All right. Okay. You are in the loop. Somebody said John Lopez sounds like a Progressive commercial. That is true. That is true. When you sounded like your parents and all that, that is a good line of commercials. All right. Coming up next, let's circle back around to the Texans. Actually, let's go back to CJ Stroud because CJ Stroud was talking about what this offense might look like. And one of the things that kind of, I don't know how low key it was, maybe it was low key, is Jerod Johnson going to be a super important, maybe even the most important part of the Texans' success this year? Let's talk about that next. Y'all on this Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line, encouraging nonsense.
This is awesome.
I need you to understand.
I love you
that.
All.
I'm still deciding, honestly, how I feel about y'all and Chris. Somebody said, John, tell him you upgrading your drip. Do not.
Oh,
do
I
not
am.
Do that.
No, there's no question
Somebody
about
said,
that.
Somebody said, John, say no cap. No, not doing that either. Let's circle back around to this. CJ Stroud talking about the offense. We talked about that a decent amount yesterday, just about especially the seeming freedom or control that he's going to seem that it seems like he will have in the 2025 season, particularly at the line of scrimmage, but just in general about what's happening here in the offense. But we did not get a chance to really dive as much into this portion of it about how much it seems like Jerod Johnson might factor into this. Jerod Johnson, quarterback coach of this Texans team, that knows CJ incredibly well.
Mm-hmm.
This was CJ actually talking about the importance of Jerod Johnson to what he is doing and to the organization.
Yeah, I think it's very important. You know, Jerod is somebody who has been with me since my rookie season, but also known me since I was in high school. I was like 16 years old. So for him to be here and seeing me in those different lights and those different points in my life, it's been cool. So I think it's be great for him, for him and Nick, because, Jerod is specialized in quarterbacks, and I think Nick is going to lean on him a lot in that area, and he's going to give him a lot more responsibility, which I think Jerod is due for, and I think he's going to do great with it. And I told him, he's one of the best coaches I've ever worked with, and just his, the way he thinks, the way he operates, the fact that he played, and really just a human being he is. And I'm excited to see him elevate just as a coach, and to be, more hands-on is going to be amazing.
All right, so let's talk about the nuts and bolts of this first.
Okay.
The nuts and bolts of what he said, and then we'll get into the impact that Jerod could have here with him. The nuts and bolts are, as you heard him say, I think he's going to have more responsibility. Well, that alone tells you that maybe Bobby Slowick wanted things done, a certain way.
No, I mean, I think we had a lot of things that could confirm that it felt like Bobby Slowick kind of hoarded more of the responsibilities as opposed to kind of sharing the responsibilities with the entirety of his staff to allow them to have the best ideas of what's going on. That was evidenced not just by that, but CJ Stroud just talking about getting what he wants and being able to have more control over the offense in general, but also specifically maybe ability to kind of change things at the line and dictate what's happening there. We have an abundance of evidence that kind of points to the idea of that.
And another couple of things that are sort of nuts and bolts aspect of what you just heard him say about Jerod Johnson. The second thing is, I think he appreciates the some semblance of continuity in the offensive room in Jerod coming back. That's the second thing. And the third thing, he said he's his specialty is quarterbacking. And I think that's where, Jerod and CJ.
I would hope so as a quarterback.
Well, yeah, exactly. No, I'm saying, but like that's his, super strength or whatever. But I also think you can extrapolate from that. Nick Caley's, he's going to lean on him more. That's his specialty. There's continuity. I think first of all, props to Nick Caley. If you're looking at this from the outside in. Huge kudos to Nick Caley for recognizing that he kind of, and we've speculated on this, he kind of has a blind spot when it comes to the passing game.
Does he? I mean, he was the passing game coordinator with the Rams.
I think you could easily argue that was a raise. They wanted to give him more money with the Rams. He specialized with the tight ends even as the passing, coordinator or whatever. He's been a tight ends coach his entire career, which is offensive line, which is run game, which is obviously tight ends. In terms of the passing game, I think it's very evident, and like I said, good to Nick Caley if he's doing this, like giving Jerod more, at least sounding board or listening to his recommendations or whatever, giving him that more responsibility. That's great for CJ Stroud.
100%. Yeah. I mean, as evidenced by obviously the conversation and what CJ Stroud talked about, but also what we know of the association between CJ Stroud and Jerod Johnson. Who better if you're coming in and you're preaching an offense that is going to be geared towards the strength of your team, and if you also acknowledge that CJ Stroud is the most important offensive and probably simply the most important player on your team, who better to help you gear your offense around that player than the dude who seems to know him very well and the dude himself, and including both of them in that formulation between Jerod and CJ?
And then there's another thing that I think is real important. We didn't play this, but we heard it yesterday. When C.J. Stroud was talking about Nick Caley, he said, yeah, we're still kind of getting to know each other, which, obvious for obvious reasons.
Yes.
They are.
Yeah.
But he's known Jerod Johnson since he was 16 years old. Like C.J. Stroud has said in the past that Jerod changed my life. He said those are words that he's talked about with Jerod. So to have that deep and strong a relationship with the one guy in the room that you're going to be with the most – while you're just getting to know, even if you respect and like and probably end up, you know, really liking whatever, the offensive coordinator, that's another just huge, huge thing. So it's really important for C.J. Stroud. I think it's going to be very important for Jerod Johnson, too. I think, you know, he's going to get a lot of accolades if they're successful and, you know, maybe even, you know, a head coaching job, much less a coordinator job, if this thing really works. But for C.J., from our perspective, what we care about the most, C.J. Stroud having a guy that he said changed his life, still there, and having more of a say in the passing game, that can be nothing but good for a guy that some people thought struggled last year.
Yeah, and I think that this is where I will absolutely agree. Well, I'll agree to a certain point that Jerod is going to be one of the most important people to the Texans' success. I think we would all agree that this is one of those years where you got to get something done. Like, it cannot be the way that it has previously looked. Obviously, a couple of years ago, you could easily point to the idea that D'Amico's first year, CJ's first year, we're getting this thing together, mm-hmm. we're going, right? So, like, having the success that you had late in the season and into the postseason, you're betting with house money. It's all gravy in that instance. Last year, you had some expectations, but they faltered, and mm-hmm. I think you made some changes based off of that, acknowledging that, okay, the development that we were hoping to build off of year one did not happen.
Yeah.
Now in year three, with all of the chips that you've pushed into the middle of the table when it comes to acquisitions of players, mm-hmm. with all of the, you know, capital that you've utilized, and with the understanding that there's a window inherent in any push towards trying to be a champion, mm-hmm. You cannot afford to waste another year of a C.J. Stroud's rookie contract. No. You cannot afford to waste another year of all of these talented players, particularly the ones that are a little bit older in age. Hell, one of them we were just talking about, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, that you brought into this, right? Mm-hmm. You can't afford to waste that. But then also, and then we were talking about this yesterday, with the idea of putting C.J. Stroud more of the offense in his hands is – you're taking away excuses, and it'd be a damn shame if you have real criticism brought on C.J. Stroud because the offense, as you talked about tailoring it to him, mm-hmm. did not actually tailor to him properly. You were just talking about going to Supermart to get yourself a sport coat, right? Mm-hmm. What happens if you're like, oh man, I'm gonna give me a sport coat, and not saying the Supermart would do this because they'd never do you wrong, but you go out there and it just doesn't fit right.
Yeah.
Like, that would be a problem. It mm-hmm. seems like he's going to be a huge part of making sure that this offense fits right to the most important guy. The fit gotta work. The fit absolutely has to be there properly.
And here's the other thing that just the more and more distance we get from the Bobby Slowick era, you start piecing all these things together, you realize Bobby Slowick was very, very much like his way or the highway.
Yeah.
Like he was bad for this offense. And it's easy to say, oh, you're just saying that because he's gone now. No, I'm the guy that called him the savant. I thought he was going to be great for this team. I had high expectations for Bobby Slowick. You know that if you've listened to this show for any amount of time. But now my eyes are open on this cat. When you put together, let's put together everything that we realize now, Bobby Slowick was just so, you know, hard-pressed to change with. Offensive line blocking assignments. That came up relatively early.
Yes.
The more control at the line of scrimmage by C.J. Stroud. We heard that. Now you're finally giving the quarterback's coach, I don't know, quarterback coach duties. You know, whereas he was very stringent on some of those other things because you just heard him say he's going to have more of a say. In other words, maybe there was a disconnect there. Like, all of a sudden I'm realizing Bobby Slowick was so hell-bent on doing things his own particular way.
I'm a little hesitant to say absolutely that they're quarterback coach duties because there are other quarterback coaches that simply kind of help them, you know, implement the game plan on the quarterback level or what have you. But I do think it's interesting, especially for a first-year coach, mm-hmm. or first-year coordinator to come in and utilize all the resources available to him, right? Yeah. Like, have a more communal effort. And I think that probably tries to, in some ways, inoculate you away from, you know, possibility of failure because you, mm-hmm. you put more heads to it, right? I think in most circumstances, you put more heads to a problem or to a situation, you give yourself a better opportunity of it going well. Plus, this is something we've talked about a lot to circle it back to the offensive line, a mm-hmm. part that's very important and hopefully you address to some degree in the rest of this week when it comes mm-hmm. to the first, second, and third rounds of the NFL draft is there's a big task in front of you when it comes to getting this offensive line right, especially when you look at it and you did not necessarily put a lot of like incredible players when it comes to talent wise on this offensive line. You're going to need to make sure that you have hand and glove fit when you mm-hmm. have whatever five, and ultimately you want to make sure all the guys that you roster, whether it's 8, 9 offensive linemen, all pull in the same direction. And so there's a big task on Nick Kelly and Cole Popovich to do that. And I do wonder if having that more collaborative environment when it comes to building the offense in general maybe frees up a little bit for Kaylee to utilize some of the specialties when it comes to getting the tight ends right, right? Because one of the things I talk about, he has a lot on his plate. Yeah. How much is he going to be able to kind of tap into that specialized positional role of talking to the tight ends? Will he have a little bit more opportunity if it's a little bit spread out?
Yeah. As
offense coordinator, not role necessarily, but some of that. And then also focusing in on this offensive line to make sure it's getting right, because none of this works if the offensive line as the foundation doesn't.
Well, for sure. But the way the collaborative part that you mentioned, I mean, you mentioned certain teams do things different ways, but ultimately every team wants it to be a collaborative effort. And what I'm saying is it clearly was not as collaborative as it should have been last year. Cole Popovich is a great example. He's a guy that came in and immediately sort of changed the way they're going to block. You know, if what we're hearing is accurate with more gap scheme as opposed to zone, and changed personnel. There goes C.J. Stroud saying, oh, yeah, I mean, this guy is going to be so important and, you know, have a bigger say. Like, in an ideal world, what you said is correct. It should have been more collaborative, but it clearly was not.
Yeah, and so encouraging that it seems like it will be a little bit more collaborative, and I do hope that, like, again, using this kind of Taylor metaphor, that they do tailor this offense very well, because I think that's going to be super important to making sure that you get the best out of what is a lot of talented players on this offense. You got to make sure that the offense serves all of them properly. And I, again, applaud to Nick Haley and Gerard Johnson to understand that, hey, man, he's going to be important in making sure that it fits right to CJ. All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, again, it's the day of game two when it comes to this Rockets Warrior series. You need to get a victory, let Lopez tell you. And so how do you do that? Well, one of the ways is just get a fantastic performance, maybe kind of like what Kawhi Leonard did. Do the Rockets have anyone capable of putting up a performance like that? 713-572-4610. Let's discuss it next.